So happy together. That's the theme of the new season of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, my conversation with music director and conductor Roger Calia. After limited audiences, the orchestra hopes to fill Victory Theater again, not only with great music, but people in the seats. We'll run down the highlights of the 2021-22 season and learn more about Roger Calia, his journey to the Tri-State. The first show in September includes a world premiere, River City Reawakened, a moving choral tribute to healthcare workers and those who lost their lives to COVID-19, and the American classic, Rhapsody in Blue. And the orchestra will be on the road, including stops at a local distillery, the Bourbon Concert Series. 2 Main Street is presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Tri-State Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. And you have a front row seat to meet the new music director of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra, Roger Calia. He's here to tell us about the 2021-22 season, appropriately titled So Happy Together. So, Roger, welcome to 2 Main Street. Exciting season ahead to welcome folks back to the beautiful Victory Theater, and that's quite a venue.
It's great to be back, David. Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful season. Thank you.
Now, the Victory Theater, your impression of the Victory Theater?
Oh, the Victory Theater is just a beautiful theater. Acoustically, the first time I conducted there, I thought it was magnificent. You really can hear everything when you're on that stage. And for the audience, it's a really very immersive experience, I think, because you feel like you're a part of the concert. You feel like you're on stage. So for me, as a conductor, I can't ask for more. And just the look of the venue, you know, it has that old kind of old world look to it, somewhat retro, but in the best possible way. And I just love the feeling of making music in that beautiful venue. It's really stunning.
Well, it's an evening out, going to the Victory Theater. It really is. It's people dress up, and it's just a wonderful experience. Now, before we talk about the new season, which great, some great performers coming, let's learn more about you, Roger Calia, now holding the baton at the Evansville Philharmonic, replacing Alfred Savia. So where did you grow up, Roger?
So I grew up in a town called Manhasset. It's in New York on Long Island. And I got into music when I was in fourth grade, actually. I chose the trumpet because at the time my grandfather used to always listen to Louis Armstrong records. I mean, that was always running, was always playing in his house. And that really stuck with me. And when the time came to choose an instrument, I ended up choosing the trumpet because of that influence of hearing Louis Armstrong.
So what music did you listen to as a teenager? Armstrong?
Oh, no. You know, I did a little bit, but I listened to it all. I really listened to everything. At the time, I didn't listen to classical music. It wasn't in my family. I'm the only musician in my family. No one plays an instrument. No music was on in the household, but it really wasn't a part of the family. No one's a trained musician. So at the time, it was, you know, collecting CDs with my friends or cassette tapes at the time. Everything from pop music at the time to rock music like Led Zeppelin and Metallica. You name it. It was a mix of pop, jazz, rock and roll. And to this day, I must say, I really do find it's important to listen to a variety of music. But at the time, it was everything.
So no one in your family really pushed you into this musical career. Was there a certain instructor, a teacher at the school that pushed you?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I was very fortunate. I went through my public school had a very strong music program. And at the time when I chose the trumpet, I really tried to play in every group that I could. The band, of course, but there was the jazz band. Then in middle school and high school, the brass choir, the pit orchestra. And then it wasn't until high school where I learned really about the orchestra. Because at the time, that wasn't as popular as playing in the concert band or the wind ensemble. So there were really two experiences that really took me to the next level of wanting to be a musician that inspired me to be a musician. One of those was a youth orchestra tour that we took in high school to China, actually, out of all places. We did an 8-city tour when I was going into my junior year of high school. And that was life-changing for me. I mean, playing in all of these different concert halls and seeing the joy that this music brought people.
And it's a universal language, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it is. And playing with so many talented young musicians, I said, you know, if I could hang with these guys, maybe this is something I can do in the future. So that was really, really special. Another moment I was going to say is when I was in high school, my freshman year of high school, our school band, our concert band, took a field trip to see the New York Philharmonic. And that was, of course, they're one of the world's great orchestras.
Oh, sure.
At the time, I had never heard a live orchestra. So this was my first experience hearing a live orchestra, and that was at Lincoln Center with the famous conductor Zubin Mehta. Just an amazing experience, and he was conducting Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, which is one of those pieces that is just iconic.
Now, I think one of the headlines I read searching your biography, and when you were performing in California, Indian American gets the baton. You have family still in India?
I do. I do. My father is from India, and my mom grew up in the States. She was born in New York, but my father grew up in New Delhi, and he has a sister and three brothers. So when I was younger, we used to visit family in India, and it's been a while since I've been there. I haven't been there since high school. But I do have family there, and now one of my cousins is actually working in New York, so it's nice to be able to see him more often. But it's an amazing country with just such a rich history.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did you go to college?
Yeah, so college, I started my college career at SUNY Potsdam, the State University of New York. So this is in upstate New York in the frigid cold, mm-hmm. right about 20 minutes from Canada. The school was the Crane School of Music, which is one of the great schools for music educators. At the time, I wanted to be a educator. I wanted to be a band director, actually. At the time, I, of course, the conducting bug was it hit me in high school. So that was something that was, of course, in my head as I went off to college. But at the time, I was majoring in music education and trumpet performance. And actually, funny enough, I was also doing a jazz minor. I know. That's something you wouldn't imagine probably conductors really doing, but it was something that, again, it goes back to Louis Armstrong, just that love of jazz. And then for my master's, I went off to Houston, Texas, the University of Houston, the Moore School of Music. And then for my doctoral degree, I went to Indiana University in Bloomington. So, I jumped around.
You have Hoosier roots then.
I did.
Now, what was your first paying gig?
Well, I was going to say that Indiana always will have a special place in my heart, even before I came out to Evansville, because this is the place where I really learned the ropes of what it took to be a conductor. Of course, I had great training coming into my doctoral degree at Indiana University, but my first job, my first paying job was in Columbus, Indiana, the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, a wonderful orchestra. It's a community orchestra, a volunteer group. Members ranging in age from 16 years old to 85 years old. And this was a group where I learned so much about what it means to be a music director. I really did. I was doing this job while I was working on my doctoral degree at IU. So it was just a great learning experience. And I was there for 4 years before I got my first professional gig then with the Charlotte Symphony. So Columbus, Indiana will always have a very special place in my heart. And just the Hoosier being a Hoosier, you know, Indiana University was also one of the great institutions of music. And I learned so much from my mentors, David Efron and Arthur Fagan, and the students there, amazing young musicians, who many of whom play with the EPO today, you know.
Now, how did you meet your wife, Christine?
We met in Houston. So Christine was finishing her bachelor's. I was doing my master's, and she's a violinist. So we met in Houston, and she was playing in the orchestra. And yeah, we started hanging out, and she's just a lovely person. And this would have been 2007 when we met. So
now she's also a musicologist.
That's right.
What is that?
That's right. Well, I always say, you know, a musicologist is a fancy name for a music historian or someone who's a scholar of music, an academic, if you will. They spend hours researching music, and they're at the archives or the libraries doing research, but they also teach. A big part of being a musicologist is being a teacher and sharing that knowledge of music with the younger generation. And her focus is on Spanish classical music. It's a really kind of very unique topic, if you will. It's not Mendelssohn or Bach. But she travels to Spain almost every summer. Due to COVID, she couldn't this past summer. Mm-hmm. But she goes to Madrid and does research for a couple of weeks. It's not a bad life, actually.
No. I went to a flamenco performance in Seville, where they just pound the floor, you know, when they
jealous.
Do dances.
Yeah, I've always wanted to
and
see
the
one.
Great guitars.
Yes, we love Spanish guitar.
Oh, and, my goodness. That's
it's really some of the greatest music, but she loves it.
And she has a great name, Christine from Phantom of the Opera. Of course, yes. I like that, definitely. Now, is she a collaborator with you on certain events?
You know, sometimes, certain mm-hmm. events she does. She, when she was in college, she actually broke her finger playing volleyball. And that kind of limited the extent of what she can do with her violin playing. But she loves playing as a way to relax. Mm-hmm. For her, it's not a job.
Is she in the orchestra?
She is not. She's not in the orchestra, but she has played with me in other orchestras.
Okay.
So, for example, I have an orchestra in Santa Monica called Orchestra Santa Monica. So she'll occasionally sub and play with them. Or actually, when I was with the Columbus Symphony, she almost played every concert. Sometimes I'd have to beg her. I'd say, Christine, we need one more violinist. Can you please play? And she would say, of course I can. So she has saved me on countless occasions.
We're talking to Roger Calia. He's the music director and conductor of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. Great conversation. Now, you've performed on both coasts. Now you're in Mid-America. Any difference in the audiences?
Oh, you know, I don't think so. I think both audiences really just enjoy the music. They love being part of that community and going to a concert and listening to great music. Something I love to do after concerts is get to know the audience. So mm-hmm. Going out into the lobby, for instance, and being able to chat about the concert. What did you like? What was your favorite part of the concert? That helps me. As a music director, helps me as a conductor. And it's also just a way to get to know people.
Sure.
I'm a people's person. I love meeting people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's so important as a conductor. You have to be personable and you have to be able to relate to people. You know, you're up on that stage where we have to remove that invisible barrier, I sometimes call it. And I try to do that everywhere, whether it be Santa Monica or Evansville or New Hampshire. Every time there's a direct connection. And I often speak from the stage to the audience. So audiences everywhere love that.
Oh, definitely.
You know, you see it could be a big city. It could be a smaller town. It doesn't matter. People just want to feel like they're a part of the experience.
Sure.
So I think
and you were at Bossy
thing.
Field.
Oh, that was so much fun. That concert at Bossy Field. And a little did I know the history of Bossy Field, third oldest baseball stadium mm-hmm. in the country, and a league of their own was filmed there, I believe. And mm-hmm. it was such a great experience because it brought in an entirely new audience who perhaps never heard the EPO. And from what I hear, people really enjoyed it. So we're hoping to do it, if not this year, next year, and make it sort of like an annual event. That was fun because it was all sports music. So classical music from different movies that relate to sports. And also John Williams, with the Olympics happening, we did all of the Olympic fanfares.
Oh, yes.
We did Summon the Heroes, the Olympic theme. It was a really, really wonderful experience. And conducting on home plate, that was a first.
Did you throw out the first pitch?
I hopefully in the future.
Okay,
I would
there
love
we go.
To. I would love to.
Well, the Otters are doing well, so maybe this was a good way to start the season. Now, coming up to kick off the new season, the Rhapsody in Blue Gala. That's a fundraiser at the Tropicana Riverfront Event Center. That's coming up pretty soon, and I know you're excited about that. Get things really rolling.
Yes, the gala that's our annual fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So it's a big event for the EPO. It's going to be wonderful to see so many people again mm-hmm. and be with our closest supporters and those that have really done so much for the orchestra. Rhapsody in Blue, of course, the theme is because we are opening the season with Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. So that's where the theme came from for the gala.
Now, that opening night, that's September 25th at the Victory Theater. Opening night, it's called American Visionaries. And one of the featured presentations is a world premiere by composer Paul Dooley called River City Reawakened. Well, that's exciting.
It's very exciting. So one of my core philosophies as a music director is to do as much new music as possible to expose our audiences to the wonderful, great living composers out there. Paul's a great composer. He actually wrote this piece, a smaller version of this piece, last year for my opening concert as music director. It was called River City. And due to the fact that we had a pandemic on our hands, we had to have a smaller audience. We had to have a smaller orchestra on stage. So it was a really neat concept. He actually had the brass musicians play in the balcony while the strings were on stage to facilitate social distancing, but also a really neat musical effect. So for this concert, it is a kind of a new arrangement of that original work with the full orchestra. So close to 70 musicians on stage.
Really?
It's a big orchestra. Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be neat.
And the great thing about this piece is it celebrates Evansville and the EPO. It is meant to feature certain sections of the orchestra, and then at the end, the entire orchestra is playing as one. And it really highlights the strengths of the EPO because there's so many talented musicians in this orchestra. And Paul's going to come out for the concert. He'll be at the rehearsals. We've already started chatting about the piece as a whole and what we want to bring out for the performances. He's a great, great person, great composer. And the musicians actually had a lot of input in the original stages of this piece. We had Zoom chats last summer about what this piece, how it can relate to Evansville and the way we can make it work. So that was really nice. It was very collaborative.
And of course, the Rhapsody in Blue will be performed by pianist Fei, is that right?
Fei, yeah, yeah. And Fei is a wonderful young pianist, a really rising star in the piano world. I mean, she, I believe she won the Van Cliber, and I'll have to look into that, but she won this a few years ago, which is a famous piano competition in Texas. And Fei and I worked on this piece at my festival in Lake George in 2015. So we have this connection, and she plays it so wonderfully and beautifully, and everyone loves the Rhapsody in Blue. I mean, so many famous themes and so many wonderful moments in that piece that are just beautiful. That combination of jazz and classical really speaks to me as a musician.
It's a 9-minute piece, I believe, isn't it? The whole Rhapsody in Blue.
Oh, no, it's closer to 16.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah, closer to 16, 17 minutes, the Rhapsody in Blue.
It's double what I thought it was.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And we had talked earlier that 84 pianists performed Rhapsody in Blue at the Summer Olympics in Los Angeles in 1984. We're going to look that one up.
That is wild.
And also on opening night, which is September 25th, American Visionaries, the chorus will salute healthcare workers and those lost to COVID-19.
That's right. That's right. Andrea Drury, our music director of the Evansville Philharmonic Chorus, and I spoke, and I really wanted to do something that really is a moment to pay tribute to those that really were in the front lines of this whole pandemic, the healthcare workers and those who lost their lives to COVID. Frank Tichelli's There Will Be Rest we're going to perform, which is this very moving, nostalgic piece of music. It's gorgeous. It just features singers, no orchestra. So they will be positioned in the aisles of the Victory Theater with the lights dimmed, possibly holding candles. It's going to be a very immersive listening experience because the members of the chorus will literally be right next to you, standing there singing this beautiful music. And it's about a 7-minute piece. And it's not printed in the program, that piece. It's kind of almost like a surprise. We don't want the audience to know exactly what's going to happen, even though I just gave it away now. You know, I think it's something that will really be special because not only that, you think about with 9/11, the 20th anniversary coming up. I know it's our concert's later, but it's another way to, you know, recognize that anniversary as well. So in many ways, it's just a fitting time to do this piece. And I think it's going to really resonate with a lot of people.
And again, the theme, so happy together this season.
Yes.
People are back together again.
And that's at the core of this season, this idea of being together, being with the community. Because last season, many of our concerts had no audience. And when we did have an audience, it was only about 10% of what we're allowed to have in the theater. So a big part of it now is welcoming back everyone and meeting people and being part of that experience where after the concert, we could all hang out. We could get to see people. You know, that's a big thing.
This is 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is the new musical director and conductor of the Evansville Philharmonic, Roger Kalia. He's all pumped up for the season, as you can hear. Now, coming up, I'm going to ask Roger if he has any superstitions before a performance. Are some batons better than others? I don't know. And the role of the conductor bringing new energy to music written centuries ago, and more previews of the new season, Porgy and Bess, Romeo and Juliet, and Mahler's Titan. Stay with us. 2 Main Street is presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. According to the Evansville Philharmonic, much of the city's musical history can be traced to the large population of German immigrants in the 1800s and their love of marching bands and the classic composers Mozart, Beethoven, and Bach. Evansville had an opera house in the 1870s, and in 1917, the schools had a formal instrumental music program. There were attempts to establish a full-time symphony in the 1920s, including the Little Symphony Society. Later, musicians who played pit music for the community theater became part of a civic organization called the Philharmonic Society. The first concert was in 1934. Fast forward to the 1950s, and the hiring of the first full-time conductor of the Philharmonic, Minas Christian. Minas Christian served as conductor for 26 years. Stuart Kershaw replaced Christian, and Alfred Savia replaced Kershaw as the orchestra moved from the Vandenberg Auditorium to the Victory Theater in 1998. Comedian Carrot Top was the first headline act, not the orchestra, which struck a sour note to many in the community. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Roger Kalia, music director and conductor of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. 87 years and counting, is that right, in the tri-state?
That's right.
There we go.
Yes.
You know, Roger, I went to high school with John Christian, whose dad, Minas Christian, was the first full-time conductor of the EPO. He was a driving force behind the youth concerts that became a staple at the old Roberts Stadium. And I know you share that passion for music education with the youth concerts.
That's right. Music education is so important to me because that's what inspired me to become a musician. So a big part of the EPO's mission is to inspire that next generation, to get them to either want to become a musician or just the next generation of listeners. I mean, this music is so influential to the development of young people. It's about teamwork. It's about community. It's about what it takes to be successful. It's discipline. So music is so vital. And a big part of that mission is it can be seen through our youth concerts, through our family concerts, where every year we do a young people's concert. And this year we're doing Peter and the Wolf, which is one of the great classic masterworks in the repertoire. We also have a wonderful youth orchestra, the EPYO-1 and the EPYO-2. And those groups are just magnificent. They meet weekly and they rehearse twice a year. And being in a youth orchestra for me was the experience that got me to become a musician. That's what inspired me to become a musician. So yes, lots to look forward to. And of course, the side-by-sides. Every year I try to do a side-by-side with the orchestra and the youth orchestra. And having them sit side-by-side with a professional musician is unlike anything they've ever experienced. That inspiration that you get from playing next to someone who has played in an orchestra year in, year out for years is really magical.
Mm-hmm. Now, before performance, is there a certain routine you go through, Roger?
I don't have a set routine, but I would like to say that oftentimes I do try to get in a nap. in the afternoon, a mid-afternoon nap, because typically we have a morning rehearsal the day of a performance here in Evansville. So that's from 10:30 to 1. So when I get home, it's usually around 2 p.m. or so. I try to get in that nap. Mm-hmm. I'll eat a light lunch. I try not to overeat. I try to eat either a salad or something light, because if I overeat, I'm just overly tired and feel heavy. I feel heavy for the performance, and that's the last thing you need.
No.
The nap and a light meal is definitely a part of my routine.
Now, of course, this is a live performance, and you are aware that maybe anything can go wrong: lighting, audio problems, last minute delays. Any incidents you'd like to share?
I do have a few incidents, embarrassing moments, and a lot of these happen to musicians. Like you said, live music, you never know what's possible. One of my favorite, well, not favorite, it was very embarrassing memories was, I remember during my first year as the assistant conductor of the Charlotte Symphony, conducting a summer parks concert. Now, this is an outdoor concert, mm-hmm. and there are all sorts of things that can go wrong at outdoor concerts. And one of those things that you always have to worry about at an outdoor concert is the wind. So we were performing right on Lake Norman, which is when you're near water, it's windy. So of course, during Jurassic Park, it was John Williams' Jurassic Park, the main theme we were doing, all of a sudden this wind gust came along, lifted the stand up, my stand up, knocked it over, the music flew off the stand, and here I am, oh no, what do I do now? Fortunately, that's a piece I know inside out, so I was able to finish the piece by memory, but it was so, it was kind of embarrassing to see this stand get lifted and fall, and the musicians looked a little terrified because they said, oh my God, he doesn't have his music, what do we do? But you know, at that moment, it went very smoothly in the end. Another funny moment or embarrassing moment was when I was conducting my youth orchestra in California, the Pacific Symphony Youth Orchestra. And every year we do a summer retreat in the mountains near Lake Arrowhead. And during a rehearsal I was conducting, all of a sudden I give a big downbeat. I think the repertoire was actually Mahler's first symphony we were rehearsing, which is a very majestic grand piece. All of a sudden, I give this big downbeat. The baton flies out of my hands, and I figured, oh, no, it's going to hit a cellist or someone. I look up, and it's about 12 feet above me, stuck in the ceiling panel, the tip of the baton, and we didn't know what to do because we couldn't get it out. So I had to get on a stool or a ladder, I forget what it was, and literally get the baton out of the ceiling. Oh,
that's a classic one. That really is. Okay. Anybody, did everybody show up on time, or do you have any kind of waiting for somebody to show up?
Let's see. I think...
I know people have delay. There's traffic. There's
yes.
all kinds of things that can happen.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, funny enough, when I was the assistant conductor of the Pacific Symphony, one of my jobs is to be a cover conductor, meaning I have to step in if the music director, for instance, or the guest conductor
sure.
can't arrive. So I remember twice this happened. Our music director of the Pacific Symphony, Carl Sinclair, his flight got delayed coming back from Costa Rica because he conducts down there too. And sure enough, 20 minutes or 30, I mean, it might have been an hour, mm-hmm. 30 minutes to an hour before the rehearsal was to begin, I get a call, oh, Maestro Sinclair is going to be delayed. And the piece on the rehearsal, the opening piece, was Strauss's Rosenkavalier Suite, which is this really complicated, very large piece for a big orchestra. And sure enough, I had to step in. And fortunately, it was a piece I had conducted before. But it's nerve-wracking to see or to hear your name called when you least expect it. But you always have to be on your toes. As a
sure.
conductor, you always have to be ready to step in mm-hmm. and fill in for someone. Or many of my colleagues and myself, you know, you'll get calls from orchestra managers that say, oh, the conductor is sick. Can you step in tomorrow and come fly out here? So it's part of the job, just being ready to mm-hmm. step in and get the job done.
Well, that's when the adrenaline kicks in.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Now, let's go back to the new season, which is So Happy Together, opening night, September 25th. Oh, I want to mention the Rhapsody in Blue Gala. That is August 28th. at Tropicana, August 28th, the gala, the fundraiser. Okay, opening night, September 25th. We talked about that with the world premiere of River City Reawakened by Paul Dooley and pianist Fei-Fei performing Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue and the chorus saluting healthcare workers. Now, next on the program, Literature and Music, Ascending Bird and Midsummer Night's Dream. Tell me about those.
Well, you know, literature and music, that's something that is very common to classical music. There's great literature that was inspired by great music, or music that was inspired by great literature. In this case, Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream was inspired, of course, by Shakespeare. And we're doing a semi-stage performance with Evansville Civic Theater, which is one of the great local institutions of Evansville. I'll be working with Kevin Roach on this production, and he has assembled a cast of about seven actors who are going to be on stage with the orchestra during the performance of this piece. So it's going to combine acting, literature, music, and that's something that I always love doing as a music director, is bringing these different art forms together. And we're actually excited to debut an anthology of local writers. I actually contributed to this anthology. My wife, Christine, contributed. And it was an idea brought about by our former personnel manager, Joshua Britton. He's a writer as well. And he put together this anthology. I think 30 or 35 writers from around the tri-state submitted writings for this anthology. So we're actually going to be debuting this anthology at that concert. So we're excited about that.
Definitely.
You know, it's really...
I'm excited just to hear about all this. This is really going to be great. Okay, then we go to Broadway's Back, featuring works from Hamilton, Wicked, Rent, Lion King, Jersey Boys, all the favorites.
All the favorites, and this is our opening Pops concert, Broadway's Back. This is part of our opening Pops, our part of our Pops series, and we're featuring Evansville native Luther Lewis. He's a wonderful tenor. He lives in Chicago. He grew up in Evansville. He is going to be headlining this event along with Tess Altaveros, who's a wonderful soprano that I worked with 5 years ago in California. And the focus on this concert is on newer musicals, but not only newer musicals like Rent, Wicked, Hamilton, like you mentioned, but also some of the classics like Phantom of the Opera and West Side Story. So it's going to be a really great experience to feature the orchestra in that really upbeat, jazzy style of these different musicals. And as a conductor, it's one of the joys is conducting. One of my favorite things to do is conduct musicals, because I think it's some of the greatest music ever written.
Well, the music from Frankie Valli and the Jersey Boys, yeah. That's great stuff.
Yeah, and actually, I'm hoping we can do a Jersey Boys suite on that concert.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yes.
Also, I mean, you have all kinds of really neat events here. The Dusty Barn Distillery of a Bourbon Concert Series?
Everyone's really excited about this bourbon series, and I can understand why. Bourbon is really popular around this part of the country, and we're so close to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Why not try something new? And the motivation behind the series is to really bring the orchestra out of the Victory and into the community and do something local, make it a local collaboration. So we're going to be teaming up with different distilleries from around the tri-state and also the Kentucky region, of course, as well. This is going to feature music paired with bourbon. So essentially, bourbon tastings will be a part of these concerts. And what we're going to do is I'll speak about the music, we'll perform it, but we'll also have information and conversation from the distiller at that specific distillery. So for this first one at the Dusty Barn, we have, I believe, six or seven different bourbons that we will sample, and each bourbon will be paired to a specific piece of music. And the cool thing about this is also the audience will be seated right next to the musicians. I mean, it's a very immersive experience. There's no, it's not in a concert hall, it's in a distillery. So a lot of this will be smaller orchestras, chamber orchestras. So it's an opportunity to do new repertoire and try some really wonderful bourbon.
Food trucks, I understand, are going to be there as well. So it'll be a fun evening. And you have the famous love stories, Porgy and Bess, Romeo and Juliet. That's coming up as well. Some great performances there. Some Gershwin music, Summertime.
Oh, yes. You know, these... The Gershwin Porgy and Bess is another, of course, classic. Mm-hmm. And we have Angela Brown and Reginald Smith joining us. These are two renowned singers. They've sung all over the world, the Metropolitan Opera, the Lyric Theater of Chicago, or Lyric Opera of Chicago. So many of these artists that we have this season are not only just renowned artists, but they really have a connection to actually Indiana, I should mention. Angela Brown studied at IU, and I believe she was born in Indianapolis. So she's a native Hoosier. So I think it's kind of neat that she's coming back to Indiana to work with the EPO. But this season, there's really a number of things I looked at when putting the season together. This idea of local collaborations being one of the most important things. The semi-stage performance with Civic Theater, for instance, for Peppermint Pops, one of our most popular concerts, doing a concert with students from the University of Evansville and having...
Yeah, you're calling a jazzy Tri-State Christmas.
Right. Yeah, so a jazzy Tri-State Christmas. It's going to be a... one of the pieces on that program is Duke Ellington's The Nutcracker. Many of our audiences probably are familiar with Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker. But this is going to be a mishmash, or a mashup, I should say, of Tchaikovsky and Ellington on the same program. And it should be really great. We're going to have a big band on stage that is going to play the Ellington version, and we will have the full orchestra that will play the Tchaikovsky version. So this will be a really great way to combine the worlds of classical and jazz. And of course, we're going to feature all of the classic Christmas carols and Christmas tunes, both sacred and secular, as well as fresh takes on certain pieces that have been in the repertoire for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And then Handel's Messiah, that's going to be on the road, isn't it?
Yeah,
a church, and then here that's in Evansville, right. And one in Jasper, I think.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. In Jasper, this has been a tradition of the EPO, is to do these concerts both in Jasper and in Evansville, and we're very grateful to the support we receive and that we're able to do that concert in Jasper.
Mm-hmm. Well, that wraps up 2021. Now, coming up, what's on the playbill for 2022? We got Mozart, Beethoven, Mahler, movie music from John Williams, and more. I'm David James. My guest is Roger Calia with the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. 2 Main Street continues. It's presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. If you are just joining us, my guest is Roger Calia, the music director and conductor of the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra. We're previewing the upcoming season, so happy together. We talked about opening night, American Visionaries, featuring the world premiere of River City Reawakened. That's September 25th at the Victory Theater. Now, before we look ahead to the performances, let's tell our listeners, Roger, how to get tickets to the shows and maybe a season pass.
The easiest way to get tickets would be to go on the Evansville Philharmonic's website, evansvillephilharmonic.org, and you can find all of the information on the website and the phone number, which you can call that number. The office is open, I believe, from 10 to 5 p.m. and Monday through Friday. So it's very easy. And all of that information, as well as the season pass info, is on the website.
Okay, back to the shows. Kicking off the new year in January with Mozart, Beethoven, and Honegger.
Honegger, yeah. Yeah, somewhat of a maybe more of a traditional program, but you have to have Beethoven in a season. Beethoven is one of the great composers, of course, as is Mozart, two of the great composers and geniuses in the repertoire. So we're going to be performing Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, which, of course, the second movement in particular is very famous. If you think The King's Speech, the movie, that was the famous ending scene with the background of the music playing was Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. But it's one of my favorite works in the repertoire. One of the first pieces I ever conducted, actually, was Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And we're going to be featuring Timothy Chewy on violin in Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5, his final violin concerto, the Turkish Concerto. And Timmy is a star. I've worked with him once now, but he is just a thrilling musician. We're really grateful to have him join us in Evansville.
Honegger, I'm not familiar with Honegger.
Honegger, is Pacific 231 is one of his more famous pieces. But Honegger is known for his rich sound, but also a very, if you know the music of Debussy or Ravel, there's instances of that in this piece. It's a very soothing, meditative work, and it's meant to depict nature, and you hear that. So it's a wonderful way to open the concert, this kind of soothing, relaxing state that it puts you in. So, and then we kick it off with Mozart and Beethoven, which are high energy, high power. So you get this great, great contrast of feeling.
Now, Nothing But the Blues in February, featuring vocalist Shayna Steele.
Yes, yes, I love the blues, and our audience really enjoys when we do concerts with jazz or the blues. So Shayna Steele is she is such a talented artist because she sings in so many different styles. Classical, blues, jazz. She was part of the band Snarky Puppy, which is one of these groups that really made a name for themselves over the last few years. And we're excited to be welcoming Shayna. We're going to be performing music by Bessie Smith, Billie Holiday, Ma Rainey, of course, Louis Armstrong, who we've spoken about a few times today, and more. It's going to be a great evening, I think, where it really shows off the style that the orchestra can bring to different pieces, the different talent of our orchestra. So we're looking forward to that.
And then Maestro of the Movie, celebrating the music of John Williams, celebrating his 90th birthday.
That's hard to believe, right?
It is. He still cranks them out. He's great.
He's amazing. He's amazing. And John Williams, his scores are, in my opinion, the best of the best. They make the movies. They bring those to a whole other level. Imagine Jurassic Park or Star Wars without music. It would completely change the action and feel of the movie. So we're going to be featuring his most famous film scores, Indiana Jones, Catch Me If You Can, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Schindler's List, Superman, Jaws, you name it. It's all going to be on this concert. And John Williams, I had the pleasure of meeting John Williams when I was in California. So we worked together. He is the nicest man, just such a gentleman. And what an amazing artist he is. I mean, the passion he brings to his music. And, you know, to this day, he's still conducting around the world at 90. He's still going to Europe and all over the country. He's such a talent and just a really just nice person.
So that gives me this lead into this question. Who are some of your role models, conductors? And
I have a number of role models. You know, Leonard Bernstein might be at the top of that list. Bernstein, for me, embodies passion and emotion. And that's so important in being a conductor. You have to bring emotion to the music. It's not enough just to conduct. You have to be the music. And Bernstein was the music whenever he conducted. He was also an advocate of music education. You think about those young people's concerts in New York. I, to this day, listen to those because I'm so inspired by them. And I try to bring that same sort of energy when I conduct a youth, as to when I conduct a youth concert. Bernstein is the master of that. I also, you know, my role models are my teachers. My teachers at Indiana University, David Efron and Arthur Fagan. They're wonderful opera conductors, but also symphonic conductors who've conducted all over the world. My mentor in Houston, Franz Anton Krager, American conductor who really taught me technique and what it means to be a conductor and how to be as clear as possible and learn how to study a score, because it really is a challenge to try to get every note in your head of a score. And he really taught me the process of studying a full orchestral score. But other conductors from the past, I'm very inspired by the great conductor Carlos Kleiber, who's one of my favorite conductors. Zubin Mehta, the Indian conductor, being an Indian-American conductor, I was very inspired to see his career. And I still have many recordings of his, of The Planets and the Holst, the Great Holst piece, the Mahler Symphonies, for instance. Mehta's recordings are just fantastic.
Now, you have all these musicians looking at you and wanting to take direction from you. So you have a lot of responsibility up there, and they have to feed off your energy.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, part of it is give or take. It's a real when I conduct, it's a collaboration. So I try to make it not only about what I'm doing, but I try to take away a lot of their energy and bring that to the music making process.
We've got all kinds of other events too. You got another jazz night, more bourbon tasting, a Pops finale with a special guest, question mark. That's a mystery there.
Yes.
And you got the spring chorale concert, Turandot, and with Alfred Savia returning. I mean, my gosh, you got a full bill here, definitely.
We do. And I do want to say I'm really excited about our season. I mean, I'm excited for every concert, but in particular, our season finale concert, which is Mahler's First Symphony. I mean, this was one of the first works I ever heard that inspired me to be a musician. And if you don't know Mahler, well, come to this concert, because Mahler, it touches every emotion in a human, sadness, happiness, joy, you name it, nostalgia. Mahler said a symphony must be like the world. It must contain everything. And Mahler's First Symphony certainly does. Offstage brass will be on this concert. The trumpet section calls for 4 trumpets, 7 French horns, 3 trombones. Folks, this is a very large orchestra. This isn't just a typical symphony orchestra. So whenever an orchestra can do a Mahler symphony, it's a very special occasion.
Roger Kalia, music director and conductor of the Evansville Philharmonic, the 87th season starting in September. Thanks for being my guest and sharing the excitement of Happy Together Again, Roger.
Thank you, David. It was a pleasure.
I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. Here's a performance by the Evansville Philharmonic Orchestra of Beethoven's Symphony No. 2 from earlier this year. At the end, you'll notice the impact of having a COVID-restricted audience. Just a smattering of applause.
Thank you.
If all goes as planned, Roger Kallia and the Evansville Philharmonic will be performing before a full capacity at Victory Theater, so expect that applause level to reach a crescendo during the new season. We close the show now with an excerpt from Clair de Lune by Claude Debussy, performed by the Evansville Philharmonic. Enjoy.